From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Thousands of Baltimore residents struggle to breathe because asthma inflames their lungs. It often sends them to the hospital or the emergency room. Kaiser Health News and Capital News Service at the University of Maryland found evidence that people in poor African-American neighborhoods are much more likely to need hospital care for asthma, in spite of research showing that decrepit housing, trash, and rodents can trigger asthma flare-ups. Jay Hancock of Kaiser Health News.
And they've done study after study after study that show that home-based interventions and primary care can reduce expensive hospital visits.
Are hospitals doing enough to head off asthma flare-ups? We also learn about Baltimore's Breathmobile from the doctor who runs it and the reporter who studied it. On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. A third of high school students in Baltimore have asthma, and it's prevalent among younger children and adults also. It inflames their lungs, makes it difficult to breathe, and often keeps them out of school. In extreme cases, it can lead to death. Nowhere in Maryland is asthma more entrenched than in zip code 21223 in southwest Baltimore, due west from the Inner Harbor. Residents of 21223 visit hospitals for asthma flare-ups at four times the rate of people from wealthier neighborhoods, according to a new analysis by Kaiser Health News and the University of Maryland's Capital News Service. Kaiser Health News senior correspondent Jay Hancock is on the line to tell us more about their investigation. Welcome, Jay.
Hi, Sheila. Nice to be back.
How did you and the student journalists at Capital News Service come to focus on asthma?
We have been interested in healthcare disparities and particularly healthcare as delivered in low-income Baltimore neighborhoods for 2 years now. And our interest in 21223 and asthma grew out of some data we obtained from the Maryland hospital system and revealed that 21223 was the highest intensity asthma zip code in Baltimore and probably Maryland. And so we got a bunch of reporters and went in to find out what was going on there.
What's going on?
Lots of low-grade housing. The street that we ended up focusing on was constructed in the 1870s. Lots of vacant homes and homes that are occupied, leaky roofs, mold, rodents, roaches, all of which can trigger asthma, and also a lack of access to primary care that can prescribe medications to alleviate asthma symptoms and keep people from going to the hospital. I should add that we measured asthma severity based on hospital contacts. So that's what 21223 is. Those folks had contact with the acute care hospital system, ERs, ambulances, and inpatient care at a rate, you know, really, really high.
So you used interaction with the hospital system as a measure of how bad the asthma problem is.
As a proxy of how bad the asthma is. And we tried to say very pointedly in the story that we showed how much this care is costing, and we made the point that investments of much, much less than what it costs to admit somebody one time in the hospital could be used to teach people to use their medications properly, could be used to do minor remediations in the homes, removing pests that science has shown over and over again, a lot of it conducted by Johns Hopkins, can prevent hospital admissions. So in other words, we can invest now and save money later through reduced hospital contacts.
Yeah, let me bore into some of those points. You write, quote, "Science has shown it's relatively easy and inexpensive to reduce asthma attacks," close quote. How easy? How inexpensive?
Well, it depends, and everything's relative. The experts in global budgeting and population health tell us is that you start with the most expensive patients. We found one set of 50 patients who collectively cost the system $6 million over 3 years. Maybe you look at them, why are they going to the hospital multiple times per year? And then you invest money. What does the money buy? It buys a follow-up primary care visit for people who go to the emergency room, meet with a doctor outside an emergency setting, learn how to use your preventive asthma medications, which is not, you know, it's not easy, learn how to reduce pests in your home, get instructions on not smoking in the house. The next level is, depending on how expensive the patient is, send asthma-certified pest companies to the house. At an even higher level, you might want to invest in actual repairs in the home.
That's Jay Hancock, former Baltimore Sun business columnist, now senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about investigative reporting KHN and the University of Maryland's Capital News Service did about the prevalence of asthma in Baltimore's poor neighborhoods. So the headline of your reporting is, quote, hospitals find asthma hotspots more profitable to neglect than fix, close quote. Explain that.
That has been the historical model for Maryland and still is for the rest of the country. The idea is that the healthcare system generally gets paid based on each hospital visit, based on each emergency room visit. And so for the system, those are incentives, right? Revenue pays bills, and for each extra admission and each extra ER encounter, that's more revenue. And so the system was incentivized not to try to prevent these hospital admissions for asthma, and we could be talking about lots of other diseases right now, too. The system had no interest in going into the neighborhoods and stopping the symptoms that were leading to the hospital visits, even though these very large, very well-endowed institutions pay little or no taxes and in return are obligated to do their best to help their communities, to improve health. Historically, they were just revenue-generating machines that basically took care of you when you showed up at the door of the hospital and stopped thinking about you when you left. Maryland now has a new payment system. It's called global budgeting. And essentially, I'm way oversimplifying here, but hospitals' revenues are guaranteed no matter how few admissions they have. Their job now is to reduce admissions, to invest money up front, to get out in the community, to keep people healthy and keep out of the hospital, and they won't be penalized for it.
You mentioned a few minutes ago a set of patients that cost these hospitals $6 million. As I recall, that was essentially the 50 patients who made the most use of hospital emergency rooms and inpatient care, correct?
Correct.
The more typical cost that you pulled from all this data you analyzed was that an emergency room visit averaged $871. An inpatient care for asthma tended to be about 10 times that, $8,700. So those are the kinds of costs we're talking about. Yet you say that the hospitals have an obligation not to take in those revenues unless they're actually trying to keep people from needing these asthma services.
The way Maryland's system is set up right now, that at the end of the day, they have a financial incentive to keep people out of the hospital. It's what the whole healthcare system needs. Maryland is trying it. It's unclear whether it will be successful. But these institutions, they say, a Hopkins executive said in our story, we understand this. It's the right thing to do. We want to do it. Organizationally, it's really, really difficult when you're these huge multi-billion-dollar institutions and suddenly all your financial incentives change. It's taking a while to turn the boat around.
That's Patricia Brown Hopkins, Senior Vice President for Managed Care and Population Health, right?
Correct.
Who basically also made the point, hey, you know, we are a business. We can't ignore the revenue side, which seemed like a fair point to me.
It is, but, you know, I would suggest that hospital systems in general, this isn't pointed at Hopkins in particular, but hospital systems in general have been much more concerned about maintaining their own revenue and their own employees and their own perquisites and their own high CEO salaries than they have been at engineering efficiencies and productivity in their systems and passing the savings along to the community. The incentives just haven't been there.
You criticized both Johns Hopkins and the University of Maryland Medical Center. Why those two?
Because they are the premier, the marquee institutions in Baltimore. They're very close to the neighborhood that we focused on. And we looked at Hopkins in particular because there was an extra element of irony there, which is that Hopkins may be the global expert on how to prevent asthma flares outside the hospital. Hopkins has gotten $200 million in grants, mainly from the federal government, to conduct research in asthma. And they've done study after study after study that show that home-based interventions and primary care can reduce expensive hospital visits.
And of course, both hospitals told you that they believe that they do a lot to earn their community benefit tax breaks. The University of Maryland Medical Center runs Breathmobile, which we're going to talk about more later in the show. And Hopkins runs Camp Super Kids, which is a week sleepaway summer session for kids. You point out that Maryland has a unique system for regulating the budgets of hospitals that no other state does. If the budgeting system for Maryland hospitals does not produce preventive care for something like asthma, what does that say about the possibility of it happening anywhere in the U.S.?
Well, it's early. The Maryland global budgeting system has only been in place since 2014. I think we need to give it at least 10 years. And some of the research, they've got to deal with the Health and Human Services and Medicare to have this system. There's already been research that's shown that it has saved hundreds of millions of dollars and promises to save more, maybe even by preventing asthma in the community.
Jay Hancock, thanks for telling us about your reporting.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Jay Hancock is senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News and lead writer of the investigation KHN and the University of Maryland's Capital News Service did about asthma hotspots in Baltimore. We'll link to that piece, which ran in the Washington Post and the Baltimore Sun, as well as related reporting. The headline is, "Hospitals find asthma hotspots more profitable to neglect than fix." Quick break now on the record. When we're back, we'll look at how funding for mobile asthma treatment vans has dwindled and why. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about asthma, that inflammation of the lungs that makes it difficult to breathe. In Baltimore, about a third of high school students, and many younger children too, suffer from asthma. A reporting partnership between Kaiser Health News and the University of Maryland's Capital News Service looked deeply at where asthma flares up in Baltimore and what hospitals are doing about it. One of the Capital News Service journalists who took part in that project, now a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, is Talia Richman, and she's with me in the studio. Welcome, Talia.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Talia, your reporting focused on the Breathmobile. Baltimore is one of just eight cities in the country and the only one on the East Coast that has a Breathmobile. Talia, what is a Breathmobile?
The Breathmobile is a mobile asthma clinic that will pull up to Baltimore elementary and middle schools around the city and treat them there at school. And why that's important is it eliminates some of the barriers that would exist between getting students asthma care because it's pulling up right where they already are, which is at school.
The Breathmobile is run by the University of Maryland Children's Hospital. Dr. Mary Beth Bollinger, professor of pediatrics, is the Breathmobile's co-founder and medical director. She was working to prevent asthma even before the Breathmobile started 15 years ago. Dr. Bollinger joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
How would you describe the impact the Breathmobile has?
It has a significant impact on particularly underserved populations because they are the highest risk group for developing asthma and also having poorly controlled asthma. So it's really important, particularly in Baltimore City. This was modeled after a program in Los Angeles where there's also a significant issue in that population. The idea is that children in the inner cities in particular have a higher prevalence of asthma, but they also have very poorly controlled asthma and are in the hospital and the emergency department very frequently. And they are greatly in need of good specialty-based preventive services. However, there are limited resources for them because very few specialists take Medicaid insurance, and certainly if they don't have insurance, they don't have a lot of options. So the idea is to have that care available free of charge and provide easy access to the families because it is a mobile van. It goes right to their neighborhoods at the schools. And we see the children right at the school, so it makes it very easy for them to come, and they don't have to take an entire day off of school, and the parents can get there without spending a whole day away from work. So it's bringing the care to the children, which is what's really greatly needed.
What changes have you seen over time?
Well, we see a significant decrease in emergency department visits as well as hospitalizations and missed school days, as much as, and actually as high as 80% decrease from the year previous to entering our program. So it's a huge improvement that we've seen, and it's been consistent for 15 years plus. It's also very cost effective. We did an analysis and found that for every dollar spent on the program, $3 to $5 is saved primarily by saving on emergency department visits and hospitalizations.
Talia, how did your team decide that the breathmobile should be part of your reporting?
We were really struck by the length that the hospital was going to bring the care to the students who needed it. It seemed like a really excellent way to get to know the people who are being immediately impacted. It just seemed like it was a concrete example of the type of neighborhood-based health intervention that has been so proven to be effective in treating asthma in cities like Baltimore.
And what were you most struck with as you dug into the reporting?
Yeah, so I actually got to visit the breathmobile at Furman Templeton Elementary, one of the 19 different schools that it visits, along with one Head Start program. And I spent some time on the breathmobile, watched doctors treat students, and it was really great because the student could come during the school day while they had a break from classes, and the parents could come, and they wouldn't have to take time out of their day beyond just coming to the school, which they would ordinarily be doing. So it just seemed very quick and easy and helpful. And you could tell it made a lot of sense when they were going over the different asthma interventions with the students and parents.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Talia Richman, now a reporter at the Baltimore Sun, who wrote about the breathmobile for a journalism partnership between Kaiser Health News and Capital News Service, and with Dr. Mary Beth Bollinger, who is medical director of the breathmobile, which is run by the University of Maryland Children's Hospital. A big focus of this reporting project was that many asthma flare-ups are triggered by trash, decrepit housing, rodents, bugs, essentially environmental factors that could be cleaned up. And if they were, we'd probably see fewer kids and adults needing to go to the ER or the hospital. Dr. Bollinger, is that a fair summary of the situation?
I think that environmental exposures are only a piece, and it's a difficult piece and an important piece to address. But it's also important for patients to have access and have prescriptions for preventive medications. As you can imagine, there's only so much of the environment we can control. It's not just indoor factors, but also outdoor factors. And a lot of studies show that if you can get on the right medications as well as do what you can to control environment, that's the best approach and the most effective approach. And that's really what we emphasize on the breathmobile, in addition to our partnership with the Baltimore City Health Department Community Asthma Program, is we're trying to give them a multifaceted approach to try and address as many of these things as we can. But I will have to tell you that certainly allergens play a role, but one of the biggest challenges we have with our patients is their exposure to secondhand smoke. 50% of our children, unfortunately, have exposure to that. That's something that really needs to be addressed, but it's very, very difficult to get families to stop smoking. We immediately, when we meet with the families, have them at least agree to not smoke in the house. But we give them a lot of resources, some of which are available here, right at, here at University of Maryland, to stop smoking and at least to make that attempt, because it's something that really is a major trigger. And yes, allergens play a role. They're very challenging to control in particularly Baltimore City because the houses are all connected. You treat one house and the other one, the mice come right back from the house next door. So, you know, it's not something that's an easy fix. We certainly do what we can to address that. But let's start with something that we can address in everybody, and that's secondhand smoke exposure.
And what have you found is the best way? You said it's difficult, but is there any approach or technique that you found that seems to have outsized impact on getting families not to smoke around kids with asthma?
What I do with my families, actually, is I say to them, you know, as based on a lot of studies, is they first of all have to make the decision that it's important. But I say, you know, we go over all the reasons that they should, many of which people are very well aware of. Yes, it affects that parent's health, but more importantly, those children, they can't get away from it. And it has a significant effect on not only, it affects actually development of asthma, so children that get exposed to it at a young age are more likely to develop asthma, but once they have it, it leads to exacerbations. So what I say is, okay, this is the reality clinically, but I have the kids be part of it. I say, okay, your parent smokes. It's a very difficult thing for them to quit, so I need you to do a trade me. I need you to tell them what you're going to quit in exchange. And I have to tell you, the child that got it the most is one that told me he was going to stop fighting with his brother. I said, okay, you got it. That tells you how hard it is to do, but it can be done. The other thing I tell parents is that every cigarette that you don't smoke, I want you to put money in a jar or a can and hide it from everybody, and by the time you quit, you could probably go on a cruise. I do whatever I can. We certainly refer them to resources here at University of Maryland, the 1-800-QUIT-NOW program. There's many, many resources available, but they have to take that first step.
Talia Richmond, in your reporting, you looked at the funding situation for breathmobiles here and in other cities. What did you find?
Every study that's done about the breathmobile really proves how effective it is, but unfortunately it has seen a decrease in funding since it was founded 15 years ago. When I spoke with Dr. Bollinger in the course of my reporting, she had said that when it first launched in 2002, its budget was around $500,000, and that is now around $300,000. So I was looking at what kind of impact that drop has had on what they're able to do.
Yeah, so I think, you know, when we first started out, there were more resources, and I think given the economy, all the breathmobiles around the country, there are 8 programs. We all rely on contributions from a lot of sources, and some of those sources from an economy standpoint have gone down for all of us. But we make adjustments and have been very fortunate to be make adjustments in our program to still provide care. I would say probably the biggest change is we were fortunate to be able to have a case manager as part of our program, but we've now had to, instead of having our case manager just for breathmobile, we've then transitioned to get that support from the hospital social workers. So we made adjustments in our model, but we are fortunate to be able to still provide that care. But the demand is greater. The availability of funding, just with, you know, we rely on a lot of foundations, is less, but we still pursue it and we still go out and do the work. We do really need support from other people, and I think the group that really needs to step it up is insurance companies. I think they need to really get on board. I think they need to, you know, a lot of providers don't take Medicaid insurance because the reimbursement is poor. So you basically, in the city of Baltimore, you have 2 institutions that take Medicaid insurance, and our waiting list in our regular clinic is 6 months. So we are fortunate we have the availability of the breathmobile to be able to particularly provide services to those children that don't have that access, because there's just limited supply of people that can take care of them. So it's not just one person, one institution. it's, you know, everyone needs to get involved to improve asthma care in Baltimore.
Thank you both for talking about it. Thank you both.
Happy to talk to you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Mary Beth Bollinger is professor of pediatrics at the University of Maryland's Children's Hospital and medical director of Baltimore's Breathmobile. Talia Richman, who now covers education for the Baltimore Sun, was part of the team from Capital News Service at the University of Maryland Journalism School that collaborated with Kaiser Health News to look at how asthma hits poor neighborhoods in Baltimore and whether hospitals here do enough to prevent it. Another breaking news development today, the Environmental Integrity Project and the Able Foundation published research showing that hospitalizations for asthma dropped sharply in the Cherry Hill, Brooklyn, and Curtis Bay neighborhoods after a pair of coal-fired power plants nearby installed pollution controls in 2009. The research also underlined the stark differences in hospitalizations for asthma in rich versus poor neighborhoods. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we'll have links to the Kaiser Health News CNS reporting and to the new air pollution report. On the Record plans to do more shows about asthma in the new year. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you've been with us for this one. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.